I hope you are having a wonderful start to your week, and I appreciate you joining me on Aspire to Lead as we're about to explore trauma responsive strategies with a wonderful guest, Matthew Bowerman. He's going to be talking about his book, Heart Leader, and just sharing strategies for fostering empathy and love in our schools as leaders, how we can create trauma sensitive spaces, and really break down a lot of definitions and terms that are used in schools that we may have a difficult time understanding because a lot of times it's painted with a broad brush. And so super excited to tap into his mind. Before we begin this conversation, though, I just wanted to touch on a few things. One, I wanted to thank you. Thank you for not only listening, but subscribing to the podcast in various forms, but also just getting the word out about the podcast. It's amazing to pull up my email and get a ranking in Chartable to say that the podcast is in the top 200 of podcasts in education in countries all over the world. And it still boggles my mind. But I wanted to shout out Denmark, India, Singapore, Egypt for this last month. You all have been just tuning in Apple Podcasts. So I appreciate that so much. I don't want to have that go unsaid. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick too is that I'm going to be keynote speaking at the MELC conference in Breckenridge, Colorado, June 19th. But the conference actually goes June 17th through the 19th. Love for you all to join me at this amazing resort area that the conference is going to be at. If you are interested in looking into more information about the speakers and the event, or you want to register to join this phenomenal group of leaders, head over to bit.ly/MELC2024. That'll get you to where you need to get all of that information for, like I said, this fantastic event. Now with that, let's dive into this conversation with Matthew Bowerman on trauma responsive approaches for teachers, leaders, and building community. Welcome back, everyone, to Aspire to Lead, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper. All right, Aspire leaders and Teach Better family, I'm so excited to be here with Matthew Bowerman, and he is, man, just got so many things in the hopper, but also I feel like I have so many things in common with this guy. It's amazing. Just having a short conversation before pushing record, excited to dive into something that he's passionate about, which is the trauma responsive approaches in schools. And I can't wait to pick his brain. Also, he's got a phenomenal resource out there that everyone needs to pick up because I know it'll help folks, especially this time of year in the spring where folks are really, you know, working through some student behaviors right now. So with that, Matthew, thank you so much for being on Aspire to Lead.
Thanks, Josh. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here with you collaborating.
Yeah. So I want folks to know you just as much as I've learned in a short period of time. And if you wouldn't mind just sharing not only about yourself, but then also about your leadership journey and how you got into the work you're doing today.
Absolutely. So I guess when this school year ends, it'll be my 26th year in education. I kind of came to it, funny, I've been in a long time now, but came into it in a roundabout way. Prior to that, I was a professional actor, singer, dancer, touring the country in film and TV and heavy in theater. Grew up in that world of the arts. Heavily did that and then had a small stint in law enforcement because my father had spent his whole career in service like that. And I kept on wanting to be a part of service. My first daughter was going to be born. And I kind of came off the road so I could kind of stabilize myself. And it just wasn't the right kind of service. And I was like, oh, you know, a lot of the work that I'm passionate about was kind of given to me by some really beautiful people in education. I was like, I could be a part of that service. And a local school was looking for an English teacher. I am a giant bibliophile and love all things literature. And I think I went in and like did a like acted out Call of the Wild or something for this principal who was like, I don't know what just happened in front of me, but I'm buying it. I love it. And I started like taking classes right away and got hired and started directing in the after school programs in the theater stuff, was teaching, you know, reading in sixth and seventh grade English 26 years ago now. Then I also added into that, like special education was heavily involved in that. And ultimately, I guess along the way, I really wanted to try to work on a more systemic level and really try to dive in on a bigger kind of change agent space. And so I leapt into administration, was fortunate enough to positions there and assistant principal and principal intern and all those kind of things. And I think it's a really good fit now for me, the assistant principal role, at least within the school system. And so I'm doing that now, 6-7 years of that. And then of course I do all my other kind of educational related work on the side as well, researching and writing and speaking and those things. But yeah, I think it's always been in one form or another about community and connection and service, and it's still working out. It's still working out 26 years later. So yeah.
Love it. Well, obviously we've got a connection there with the arts, and love that, you know, you've gone a lot of different directions to serve in the educational space, but I want to specifically talk about, you know, the work that you've been doing. You have a wonderful book, Heart Leader, A Trauma Responsive Approach to Teaching, Leading, and Building Community. But before we talk about that resource and a lot of different topics in regards to the trauma responsive work, I'd love to know just where it came to be that you were super passionate about this topic specifically.
Thanks. I appreciate the question. I think I have really always loved, you know, to learn. And I've talked about this, I think, before with colleagues and in other social media spaces, this idea of I always loved to learn, but it didn't come easy to me. I really struggled with it. A lot of undiagnosed learning issues, you know, dyscalculia and just some other things that I really struggle with that made learning visible, but at times unattainable and caused a lot of struggle early on. And that was combined with early on in my childhood, there was, I guess, a lot of need for connection, and it kind of led me into the wrong spaces or into the wrong arms of, I guess you could say, of monsters who, you know, preyed on children, and, you know, they were kind of wolves in sheep's clothing kind of spaces, and it led to a lot of trauma. And, you know, from that place, I read somewhere once you have to, you don't want to run away from the fire because you missed the opportunity to be forged by it, right? So I was dipped and hammered and started to be forged in a space of I was being a very hypersensitive, hyper emotional kid, which I still wear proudly now, but at that time led to a lot of emotional struggle because I couldn't, you know, there was so much hyper arousal around the trauma that I was experiencing over an extended period of time, physical and sexual abuse related, that I couldn't like come to terms with it in my own spaces. And so it just came out in classrooms and hallways and lunchrooms and all the inappropriate ways that a little kid who's trying to cry out and not know how to, it just, none of it was working well. And so this love for learning combined with this violence that was happening, I couldn't reconcile those spaces. And so I just kind of stumbled through school, you know, early on, despite loving to like read and draw and write and tell stories and all these lovely things about education. And I think in that time period, the more that I struggled, the more that teachers just didn't know what to do with this really creative kid who was also extremely emotional, really struggled in like a lot of academic areas, and just kind of became like, as a teacher called me once, the spaz. And yeah, and it just careened out of control for a long period of time there as I tried to not only find my place, but figure out what I had done wrong or what had happened to me in the journey. And, you know, it was the arts. It was books and the arts that saved my life, 100% saved my life and led me to spaces and people that access deep wells of healing and forgiveness and a lot of things, you know, in me that started to kind of lead me on a path to like, again, wanting to serve, wanting to help others, wanting to connect in ways that I guess I didn't feel so alone. And, you know, with the arts for me, it was also like pretending to be someone else sure felt a whole lot better at times than being this little boy that just couldn't get understood and figured out, I guess, in a lot of ways. So that's kind of the some of the early origin around some of that.
No, that's powerful, Matthew, and I appreciate your vulnerability in that response and sharing out, because I do think that, you know, a lot of people listening have had, you know, something similar or potentially gone through some trauma in their own life. And if they're assessing, then they're also understanding that there may have been some behaviors that occurred in the classroom due to what they experienced early on in their life. And I know some of my story is attributed to that too. The ways that our behavior is recognized sometimes is, I know my teachers thought I was just a goof off and didn't care about school, when obviously there was a deeper story there. And, you know, you as an assistant principal now being in a, you know, that flipped role, you know, now looking for the behavior as a language there and trying to, you know, decipher what's going on in the lives of your students is amazing. And I want to talk about your book a little bit more as far as the approaches that you're focusing on in your schools. So, you know, with the work that you're doing, I want to look at what does that involve in regards to your leadership position, but then also what have you tried to do within your school?
Sure. So this kind of, I guess, this brand, right, this concept of heart leading came from early in my educational career. Someone said, you always have your heart on your sleeve. And, you know, that also comes from this kind of very hyper emotional place, but that I was always very connected to people emotionally, either sensing theirs or sharing mine in some kind of vulnerable way, not oversharing, but just being very attuned in those kind of ways. And I think heart leading, the concept of it really comes out of this idea of operationalizing love as a strategic tool to do kind of three approaches, really, which are around prioritizing students and empowering them, around supporting school staff, you know, from the cafeteria worker to the bus driver to the paraeducator to the teacher, et cetera. And then engaging with and bridge building with parents and caregivers and communities, all through entirely through a lens of love, that everything we do is about authentic relationships and authentic love. And without that key factor of love for what you do, love for who you are, love for the people that you're serving every day, that we're in this like human, you know, this human construct, this human business of service in the benefit of other human beings. Like that's our greatest factor, like the human factor. And that in working from a place of love directly, and many different ways that love language, that work love language, that personal love language can be spoken and shared and exchanged, like you can really entirely, you know, produce a climate and culture that is restorative, that is transformative, that is built on emotional regulation and really giving students language and behaviors to be able to work trauma responsibly themselves, to give staff the ability to promote self-compassion, to reduce hyperarousal, to really focus on pedagogy and behavior and relationship building with children that's truly constructive and not reactive. And you can give parents messaging and communication and tools to understand where the school is promoting from and things that they can, in essence, do at home in their own relationships with their own children, their own spouses and relations. And so it has a very overarching, I like to think, you know, attractiveness and power to it, the more you can kind of hone that. And so Heart Leader really explores that from like one's own origin building to then kind of dissecting those three areas, what they look like in a school, what they feel like. And then in the book, at least, a whole series of strategies throughout the book on how to actually operationalize and build out those, that messaging, those behaviors lived out through action, and how those things then are really applied in classrooms and in all learning spaces.
You had talked about, you know, the first step being the origin building, and I want to expand on that a little bit more because I know it's kind of almost like a personal assessment of your purpose. And so I'm just curious, like how you construct that in the book for folks to kind of do that inward assessment before they can do the work outward.
The book starts, you know, in a way to really help people, like I mentioned, about this authentic relationship piece, to like say, like, I want to be as much with you in this work as I want you to be with me engaged in the work, whether you're a parent in the PTA, whether you're a single parent struggling, whether you have, you know, a giant family, whether you're a student, whether you're a school staff member, like the opportunities to engage and transform and create together in a love-based space are like endless if you're willing to open yourself up. And so it really starts with me as a little boy and what that looked like and felt like to see the world like a giant adventure, and to try to find one's way through that, even when there was a lot of shadow, you know, there as well. And so that to be trauma responsive, in my personal and professional opinion, to work socially, emotionally in a strategic way, you know, to work restoratively, you know, in school communities, none of that work can like truly and authentically be done unless you've done the deep work on yourself. Like, I can't take the work out of the work for people. And so it requires, you know, the best health you can give yourself, in my opinion, is mental health. And so that work really has to start with yourself. And I mean, for me personally, as an advocate for it, I spent a very long portion of my life exploring a lot of mental health supports, you know, from mindfulness-based pieces to breath work to therapy, all the kinds of different things to work through my levels of trauma, also to ground myself as a human being, as a father, as a husband, to try to figure out little ways just to make a change piece by piece, one day at a time, to try to continue to transform myself and my practices, if for no other reason, to get healthier and more grounded so I can live more authentically for myself. I think the benefit there is the ripples that come out of that are really positive and I hope profound impact on the communities I'm serving. And so it really then takes you into a little bit about adverse childhood experiences, you know, the ACEs data and a lot of pieces around what that looks like in our country and the mental health needs that are happening, especially post-pandemic. And then a series of operationalizing like questions and strategies to really get at the heart of the person who's, you know, I hope reading that book with me and now really there with me, having either connected to my trauma with theirs or not necessarily triggered, but having it activated in their own heart and mind and body and feeling some of that uncomfort or discomfort with what they've gone through. And then seeing that I can also take them through a place where they can ground themselves to reduce that, to, you know, start to learn more about interoceptive, like awareness and really being able to sense and understand their own body, like awareness and feelings and sensations when they're triggered, when they're wrestling with their own work. So they're able to learn how to compartmentalize, work through things, practice that self-compassion, that mindfulness, and learn strategies to do that. So by the time you're moving into the other chapters of the book, just like in the same way that you walk into school in any given day or serve your community in every given day or whatever role you may play, like you're in a place where you've checked privilege at the door. You're in a place where you've taken enough breaths and grounded yourself in whatever exercises you're using, that you're in a emotionally available space for children, that you're in a very clear and honest space with yourself to engage with other adults and support them in order to support your own work, and that you're in a, you know, positive, forward-facing, non-reactive, non-reflexive kind of place, that you can also engage with parents who are bringing everything from their own intergenerational trauma to their own feelings around school, whether they be positive or negative, to you every day, whether it be email or in a car rider line or whatever it is. And so you're just really trying on any given day to bring your best self to that, your most whole and most realized self. But it takes time to understand that origin, who you are, what you've been through, where you've come from, and knowing that it is okay to not be okay at times. And there's nothing wrong with you as you work through the frailty and fragility that you possess, that those cracks, like they say, let light through, that, you know, children aren't broken and need to be fixed in either of you as you work through those things. But it is difficult and it is messy and it will be difficult, but at least within educational spaces, like, to do that best, most loving and honest work, it really has to start with self in order to move anything else forward, whether it be benchmarks in academics, whether it be data conversations and monitoring on various progress monitoring tools, whether it be social emotional strategies or like designing trauma sensitive spaces in a school. Like, none of it can happen.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcast. Now let's get back to the episode.
Love everything you just said, Matthew. I want to talk about the next step as far as, you know, having that leadership lens, right? So if we're trying to do this work on a campus, you know, how do we provide social emotional support to our students and to our staff? But again, as a leader trying to implement that versus, you know, potentially being, you know, a teacher or a staff member, just kind of living through that initiative, I'm hoping that you can provide more of a leadership lens on that one.
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, a canvas. So I'll take that for a minute, and go with the metaphor of that, like almost like a painter. I'm going to work from the edges in on the canvas.
Perfect.
And so like anything that I'm going to do on those edges to support a trauma responsive, restorative, you know, social, emotionally grounded approach to like generating self-love and like promoting love in a school community. If I'm going to do it for one in that way, it's going to be good for everybody. Like that's going to benefit everybody's health, everybody's approach to school, elevate their feelings of loving why they got into this work, why they serve. And so working in that way. So it's really first around being vulnerable as a leader and communicating what you're about and why you're about it and what you would like to bring to that experience, not because of what's missing, because, you know, working from a reductive standpoint with a school staff or, you know, in any space with others you're trying to help understand something and join you on, like, doesn't really promote like true community building. So like, I want to take all the things that are working and bring those into that, those edges, and then move those forward onto the canvas, so to speak. So now we're going to start adding some other colors to it. And that really starts then talking about what culture has existed, what climates existed, and what we need to do to begin to either reshape it, elevate it, or transform it into a space where we're really promoting this trauma responsive, kind of restorative, you know, culturally responsive piece, looking at the data of our school. Who are the communities, the children we're serving? What do they need? What has the voice data told us from staff and families and students? How much are we soliciting focus groups and conversations to really begin to create the messaging as we move in a little closer for what this school is about? What has it been about? What its history is? What do the elders and the community members say about it when they see it, when they think about its history? What do we want to reshape again or transform or elevate moving it forward, and what that messaging says, and how do we communicate that messaging to our children, our staff, and our students in ways that bring all the stakeholders together as we start to create some buy-in for that idea of like heart leading and transformative, like love-based leading. And that's kind of what I'm trying to constantly do in places I've served in and in the work I'm trying to do, you know, now, on a bigger scale, and then on the boots on the ground scale in this beautiful community where I work now, where there's a lot of talk with kids around, like, do you know why I'm having this conversation with you? It's because I love you. It's because I value who you are. And why this might not have been the right choice to make, I can understand why it happened, but let's really talk about something a little deeper about what happened here that led you to this place. So the conversations transform around the messaging you're doing. The behaviors from adults towards children and the relationships there start to transform when it's no longer like adult and child, but more of a shared interplay and relationship between two people or multiple groups of people who love the work and the learning and the space and the opportunity enough to see it as a gift, as opposed to like something we have to do. And so then the behaviors through this heart leading lens start to take on a different kind of life in terms of what does it look like when you're auditing a school from a heart leader lens? What does the language look like in the classroom? What does the curriculum look like from a pedagogical standpoint? What do evaluations, formal and informal, look like when you're really trying to help, you know, build capacities of staff and also make sure everyone's working in a trauma responsive way that's very much, you know, very, very much responsive and not, like I mentioned previously, reactive or reflexive, where the space itself, the walls inside, outside, are all reflecting and mirroring and bringing to bear within the community a greater sense of love for learning and love for the people that are doing the teaching and the learning and the conversations around what that looks like and feels like on a daily basis, and consistently bringing families into that. So it's no longer a foreign space of, my grade book is secret and these things I can't really share as much, but you know, that we're opening up things in a different way. It's really, you know, peeling back a lot of Western layers in the Western educational models that existed for so long that were like, because I'm the adult and I say so, and punitive. And this, that's just not the way of the world now. And certainly post pandemic, what our children in K-12 have been screaming out about with the tremendous amount of mental health needs that are out there. And just as important, what the weight that our teachers have carried again and again, and our administrators as well, tremendous weight and pressure through virtual learning, through the pandemic, you know, trying to save their own lives while trying to save kids' lives and support families through such wreckage. And now to come back from all that, carrying so much, I often say it was a time of great loss and tremendous hope for what was lost and just what could be. And being able to recognize that, leaning into that discomfort, and really trying to heal from those places, knowing that so much damage did occur and did happen across the country and beyond, but there's so much opportunity for repair and healing and like newness to come out of that place. And for me, like love in all of its forms and trying to drive that forward and create ways to demonstrate it and build it out from a kind of a heart leading approach as a leader is like, is the key way to make it happen.
So I want to talk about the building the trauma sensitive spaces, because you did speak on that earlier in one of your responses. And I'm curious what that means to you as far as what a trauma sensitive space looks like, but then also as far as a leader, what were your actions to build one?
So you have a couple layers here around trauma sensitive terminology, trauma informed, trauma responsive. To me, like the trauma informed piece kind of lives in a place of like training and discourse and scholarship, thus the informed and informational based approach to starting to become familiar and grounded in terminology, maybe some technique around it. And really, this might just be like rhetoric here and just bandying terminology around, but I kind of break them down in my own mind this way. And then being trauma sensitive, you're starting kind of the aperture's starting to increase a little bit in terms of I'm on a little bit of a wider lens now, thinking about like a camera in terms of my sensitivity, my access, my availability to people and children and adults and spaces, with being aware of what trauma may look like, smell like, sound like, feel like on a daily basis, and how I respond to it, how I look at it on a daily basis. And then in turn, who I partner with, the school counselor, school psychologist, behavior interventionist, social worker, another teacher who has a close relationship with said child, on how we work together as a team. Because like I mentioned, this work can be very messy, very challenging, and certainly doesn't exist in a silo for any leader. More often than not, I'm surrounding myself with experts 10 times more knowledgeable than I could be to help build my capacities and elevate me just as much. But then the trauma responsive piece, like there's like the full on wide aperture where I see the world, not only from that 30,000 foot, but the ground level view, that when, you know, there are moments where something pops off and happens and you have to almost in essence react to that moment, so to speak, quote unquote. But we're also trying to work as much as preventatively as possible when you're trauma responsive. So trauma responsive is about as much about your response that is not reactive and not knee-jerk reflective as it is in creating preventative measures and preventative supportive measures in schools that help to give students time, opportunity, and space to really emotionally regulate. You know, and you don't have to know a child's trauma, I've said before, to love them. And you certainly don't need to know someone's trauma history to see if they have anxiety or depression or just having a massive, difficult panic attack or just really, really pissed off and sad or frustrated, whether they be in 12th grade or third grade. You know, trauma results in like really overwhelming and intense feelings. There's a lot of rumination going on where the mind is spinning and looping and twirling. They call it many different things. And people get locked in, right? You have like the amygdala hijack and the fight, flight, freeze, appease things going on. We know about those. But you have a person, like a big person, 6-plus foot tall senior in high school. You might have a sixth grader. You might have a 3-year-old, like locked down and struggling and needing something. And like you mentioned, behavior is a form of communication and they're sharing something. They slam the Chromebook down. They throw a book. They punch a locker. They are doing whatever it might be, or they're just by themselves, hoodies down, AirPods in, and have shut the world out because they need something else and they either don't know how to get it or they do and they're sending some clear signals about it. And working preventatively and responsively is acknowledging those signals and taking the time to slowly work your way into that, into their circle, into their space, which talks about, you know, or really points to a lot of heavy relational work that must happen with students, you know, at every level first. But ways to do that are around designing these trauma responsive spaces in schools. And, you know, they call them lots of things, right? Calming corners and Zen dens, innovation stations or imagination stations, you know, deregulations, all those types of things. But, you know, we're trying to help students, kindergarten to 12th grade. We use different language for it, different modalities for it, but trying to help children, and let's be honest, adults too. I mean, I don't know about, like, teachers certainly are supporting one another all the time on their teams and things. And administrators have a lot of very difficult conversations with teachers about things they're sharing or things they need to share to build capacity or to support, that really point to trying to observe emotion without judgment, trying to validate someone's emotional experience in an authentic, loving, and honest way, and then trying to help people develop ways to regulate and cope with those emotions, which are often like emotional responses to trauma or being triggered by something. And so working with your staff and working with your children in a classroom, in a school, in a staff lounge, to put together spaces, areas that are safe from all the hustle and bustle, from all that noise and static, that can help them access a part of themselves that begins to give them some basic tools to learn how to understand feeling and how to learn about regulation at their appropriate age level and with support, of course, is a critical thing, I think, to any trauma responsive school. And that looks like providing, for example, a staff goes through a very difficult experience supporting a child, that bringing in a restorative justice team to have circle work over repeated circles with that team to help them unpack, to talk. I mean, it might feel like a form of therapy, although it's not therapeutic, but getting the opportunity to discuss the harm, to discuss what they process, what they feel, what they haven't processed, to be able to move it forward as a group is very powerful in loving learning, so they can learn new tools or at least be able to get some of that out to move forward, so they're not working with resentment or feelings of not being heard, valued, and appreciated as adults working very trauma adjacently and having a lot of compassion fatigue. It takes on the form of like working with a 10th grade class around putting together a small space in the corner where all the students, you know, like you have like those calculator pocket hangers and all the kids have their phones there if it's a school that allows them, and there's chargers for all their phones and there's headphones and there's music, and they can sign, you know, the kids have helped create the rules of that space where there's a couple bean bags or there's a chair, you know, there's some music, and that they can just vibe out right there and just disappear for a little while into their favorite music that they can plug in and turn on for a certain amount of time. And then they come back and they debrief it with the school counselor or the school psychologist or their teacher or another peer in the class. But there has to be that also that consistent messaging around the buy-in for what those spaces look like. It might be in a space, and I've seen these very beautifully done, certain areas of hallways that are cleared out where there's a lot of light. The walls have been painted in more pastel colors, which has been psychologically and scientifically proven to reduce a lot of overstimulation and a lot of triggering, where the colors are more subdued and gentle. The lighting also mirrors and echoes that same kind of emotional vibe. There's also a lot of greenery around, a lot of plants and things like that. And the seating is very soft and gentle, not a lot of hard angled edged corners to furniture. It's much softer. The rugs and flooring and areas seem to offer an inviting and very kind of peaceful place. So when someone sits down, it's just like releasing a breath. There's a relaxation, there's a release of tension, and the furniture helps to kind of convey a sense of wraparound, you know, which again, this preventative place speaks to kind of a wraparound holistic care approach as well. So, you know, the student who is able to articulate, I'm really frustrated by this right now, I need 5 minutes over here just to sit and vibe out. I'm just going to draw in my sketchbook. And they're just, you know, scribbling and drawing and doodling and doing their thing away. And then they put it away and they come back. That then there's also another level of debrief that happens there. But every classroom, grade, and age level has to kind of unpack those based on, you know, the vibe of the school, what the messaging and community, you know, approaches from the school and the leadership and from the teachers on the team. And what that class and all those stakeholders have kind of agreed to, what they're going to create and what it's going to look like. In the kindergarten class, it might be the beautiful little castle tent that's over there filled with plushies and a beanbag chair. And the kids go in with their favorite plushie because each kid in the class has been able to bring in a stuffed animal and a family photo or a picture of one of their favorite people. And they just sit in there and they hold it for a little bit. And then they come out and they talk with the teacher about what they were feeling, how it made them feel, what they could do moving forward, and how it felt to hold the animal and lay there and breathe a little bit. And then the teacher sits there with them and they have a few breaths together to recenter together. And the teacher's holding their hands, or they're just sitting face to face for a minute. And then they can move on to the next part. And then the paraeducator comes in and checks on the child, or the school counselor comes back and checks on them. And there's this constant sense and those trauma responsive environments where the pieces that are being moved are consistently positioned to show this child, I am not going to back out on you no matter what you do or what happens. I'm still showing back up again and again to say, I love you. I'm here. I'm not going to fold on you. And no matter what happens, I know you're working through things and I'm here to work on them with you. And we'll meet you where you are and find a way to get through it together.
All right, Matthew, I loved what you responded with not only the definitions, but then also the spaces you were talking about. For those who want more information, head over to joshstamp.com. You can find the link to get Heart Leader, a trauma responsive approach to teaching, leading, and building community. Matthew, I want everyone that's listening to make sure that they connect with you as soon as possible. So if you wouldn't mind just sharing, you know, how they may connect with you on your website or through social media.
Thanks, Josh. And again, I just want to say I'm really grateful to be here. I really appreciate it. I want to also say to everybody who's out there in this work that I'm really grateful for everything you're doing in the service of students and staff and families. And that, you know, none of us are alone in this work and we can't do it alone. Absolutely not. And that if any ways I can support you and your work, to please let me know, to reach out. I'm happy to engage. You can reach me on X. It's at @MJ Bowerman, or on Instagram at all lowercase, Mr. MJ Bowerman. You can also check out the book and more about me at Teacher Goals, but it's just www.teachergoals.com/heartleader. I'd love for you to pick it up. If it impacts you, if it moves you, reach out and let me know. I'd love to have a conversation with you about it. I think that's critical that we continue to engage in those love-based ways in educational spaces with each other. So thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure. And so I put that up on the screen here for those who are watching on YouTube. Appreciate everyone that's watching the video in addition to those who are listening through their podcast players. But teachergoals.com/heartleader. Of course, you know, if you're looking to get the link, also you can go over to joshstamper.com. You can make sure that you connect with Matthew. Obviously, we're going to have all the links in the show notes, and then obviously the link to his phenomenal book also. For those who are on YouTube, thank you so much for heading over there. You can find this on the Teach Better page or Joshua Stamper page on YouTube. And love for you to push that subscribe button and catch all of the episodes that way. But I appreciate everyone listening on the various platforms. With that, Matthew, I love your heart. I love the passion that you have for this topic and the work that you do. It's so important. And I'm just so grateful that you're not only doing this within your community, but then also sharing in multiple formats to get this out to the masses. And for those who are listening and want more information, please reach out to Matthew. He is a brilliant resource and someone that I would highly recommend you lean on for this trauma responsive work. So with that, Matthew, thank you so much for being on Aspire to Lead.
Thank you so much, Josh. I really appreciate it. Thank you.